Psalm 54. This is, we're told, verse 1, a contemplation by David when the Ziphites came and said to Saul, isn't David hiding himself among us? So they betrayed him, didn't they, to Saul. Saul looked like the winner, and in any case, the men of Ziph were likely more connected with Benjamin than they were with Judah. And so this is David's reaction to betrayal. Now, betrayal does leave a lingering sense of bitterness, without doubt. And yet David appears to deal with it by writing songs about his experiences, or poems initially. And yet he openly shares how he thought and how he felt. Or you can say, although he wishes a fair bit of judgment on these guys, he does bring God into every feeling and situation. Now the men of Ziph betrayed David to Saul twice, 1 Samuel 23 and 1 Samuel 26. And both times God saved him from their machinations. The first time it really seemed it had worked. Saul, on their tip-off, chased David to a hill, a conical hill, was chasing him round and round, and David was going to get to the top, and that was it. No escape apart from upwards to God, as it were. And yet then a message came. The Philistines have attacked the country, and Saul had to leave him and dash back. Second time, when the Ziphites betray him, that's in 1 Samuel 26, and Saul is right on top of David. David sneaks into Saul's camp at night, steals Saul's spear and water jar, and God makes a deep sleep fall on the guards of Saul. And then he goes and shouts out to Saul in the morning, you know, look, I've got you a spear and water jar, I could have killed you, but I didn't. And that elicits from Saul a desire to give up the chase. So each time the Ziphites betrayed David, it was undone by God's intervention. And yet in this psalm, you sense his hatred of the Ziphites and his desperate desire that they should be condemned and judged by God. And yet he says that at the very same time as he is showing unusual grace towards Saul. Now, what are we to make of that? I think you could say, well, yeah, he showed grace to Saul, but not to the men of Ziph. And yet, yeah, okay, in that case, you could say, yeah, that's about us, that, yep, I can show great grace and forgiveness to one person, but then something else crosses my path the same day, and I am not at all so gracious about that. Yeah, look at what he says about them, verse 5, repay evil to my enemies, destroy them in your truth. I will give thanks to your name because he's delivered me and my eye has seen triumph over my enemies. I think that's a prophetic perfect. He's saying, I know that you are going to destroy my enemies and I am going to praise you when you do so. I think that's the idea. He says, these are men who are violent, who are seeking after my soul. They're strangers who've risen up against me. He treats them like they're Gentiles. He's very condemnatory of them. So you could say, well, yeah, at this very time when he's betrayed by the men of Ziph, he also shows great grace to Saul, although he is very bitter and condemnatory and lacking in grace towards the men of Ziph. Well, yeah, as I say, it could be that just like us, you show grace 1 minute to one person, but not to the next, to another person the next minute. Unfortunately, our grace is often not a fundamental part of our character. Or you could probe a little bit deeper. You could say that he had this great anger with Saul. You see that in many of the Psalms. He has this anger with him and yet also this pity for him and this kind of love for him. When Saul dies, he genuinely is very upset and he does show a lot of grace to the house of Saul afterwards. And yet, it was as if he was sort of restraining his feelings towards Saul. And when he had the chance to kill him, he sort of restrains himself and says, no, I must do the right thing. I must show grace. And he does. But it's as if he transfers that anger, that restrained anger that he has against Saul and his desire to see Saul suffer for what he'd done to him. He sort of transfers that onto the Ziphites who also done him evil. And so that's how it can be, that there is this lingering anger and resentment within us that, all right, you may restrain it to one person, but then it makes that the act of restraint makes it come out all the more gushingly against others. Well, of course, What we're asked to do is to not be like David, not to transfer the anger from one person to another or the resentment from this situation to that situation, but to deal with it. And it's easy to say deal with it. Well, what should David have done? I suppose he should have looked a bit more at his own failings. Although this is before he sinned with Bathsheba, he was also not exactly innocent. He certainly had problems with his bloodlust, killing Philistines far more than were needed. And I guess he should have just done what he keeps saying in Psalm 119, to keep focused upon the word of promise that he would one day be the king of the kingdom. When all this stuff, Ziphites, Saul, all that stuff, all would be no more. God had promised him, you will be king. And he says in Psalm 119 that he reflects on God's word all the time and it comforts him, strengthens him, etc. And the word that is in view there, I think, is specifically not the whole Bible that was then extant, but the word of the kingdom. The word that he would be king of the kingdom. And that should have been enough. That longer-term perspective to get him over all this stuff about bitterness against those who are trying to stop him and trying to thwart his path there, because nobody could thwart or stop that purpose of God, not betrayal, nothing. It's the same with us. We have been given the word of promise that we will be king priests in God's kingdom, that we shall reign forever, that we will be in the kingdom. That's the word of promise to us. And it's similar, really, because we pass through all kinds of betrayal, all kinds of situations that provoke resentment. And yeah, we deal with some of it by grace, other times, other situations, not so much by grace at all. And yet it seems to me that if we had done what David should have done, that wouldn't be the case. That, wow, I will finally be in the kingdom. And all this stuff in these few millimeters of life that I'm living through now, these few brief moments, compared to the eternity of God's kingdom, all that betrayal, all the pain that naturally arises from betrayal, all the pain of being unjustly accused, persecuted, and all the rest of it, all that, why let that define your life when you have before you the hope of God's kingdom? That is really what you have in front of you, and you have God's word of promise that thus it shall be. So I know that these things are so difficult. I've passed this path to some degree, the terrible betrayal, the persecution, and the rest of it. It does take a grip on you. It can do. And yeah, you can show great grace one minute and not so much the next minute, and yet don't sweat at all. Really, focus on the longer term, that we will be in God's kingdom.